Hey then, welcome to Making Positive Psychology Work, the weekly podcast where we uncover tested practical ways to help people move from functioning to flourishing at work, so together we can better navigate the incredible challenges and opportunities our world faces. I'm your host, Michelle McQuaid, and what you probably don't know about me is that during my teenage years, I slaved over a checkout at our local Kmart, and after a 12-hour day during Christmas time, used to dream of scanning items in my sleep. Oh yeah. Thank you so much for joining me for lesson number 31 of Making Positive Psychology Work. I'm so glad you're here because today we're talking to Jo Murray, a facilitator and change consultant who holds a master's in positive psychology from Melbourne University and is particularly interested in the concept of psychological capital and the role that leaders and organisations can play in positively impacting the well-being of employees through authentic, people-centred approaches to leadership and employee engagement. Now, Jo's a chartered member of the Australian Human Resources Institute and a member of the Australian Institute of Company Directors and has held directorships for over 10 years. But what you probably don't know about Jo is that during her years in retail, she was responsible for the recruitment and training of store Santas at Christmas time. Welcome, Jo.
Thank you, Michelle. It's great to be with you.
Jo, I'm so looking forward to this conversation because psychological capital is one of those areas I have a great interest in, but I've never practically applied. So for those who might be in a similar situation to me, can you start us off by explaining exactly what is psychological capital?
Great question, Michelle, because it is important to understand what psychological capital is. And it's probably most simply described and most commonly described as the notion of who you are and, more importantly, who you're becoming. So it's something about the individual and what it is that's unique about the individual that they bring to an organisation and bring to life in their performance in an organisation. And for a long time, organisations have thought about things like their economic capital, the resources and money they've got to work with, the human capital, and thinking about that in terms of the pairs of hands and the people they've got to do work. And their social capital as well, the connections, the relationships and networks that people might have. Psychological capital is really an extension of that notion, but it's really thinking about the individual and the individual's potential to really be great and perform at extraordinary levels in organisations. So it seems if we can tap psychological capital, we can tap that extra kind of edge in performance and have work be pretty rewarding and meaningful.
Now, that sounds like something most organisations would want more of, I'm imagining, talking to business leaders. So when they say, well, what does that mean practically? How do you answer that question?
Well, practically what it means is really getting people thinking about what they're doing, enjoying what they're doing, doing a really good job, and having an attitude that's associated with high-quality performance and a sense of optimism and a sense of backing themselves in and seeing a real can-do in their approach to work. So in practical terms, what it delivers for organisations is a way to access in performance and to access improvements in performance, particularly if leaders can get their head around the concept of psychological capital and start to really think about that, framing up the way that they work with their people and the way that they engage with their people around things like providing feedback, discussing performance issues and coaching their team members.
So if leaders invest in building psychological capital in their people, what are some of the things we're finding through the research they might be able to expect realistically as outcomes?
What we're observing is that people who are higher in psychological capital is higher levels of employee engagement. So they feel more engaged and involved and rewarded by the work that they do. They also track as having higher levels of job satisfaction and greater levels of commitment to the organisation that they're working with. And one other dimension that keeps emerging in the research is something we call pro-social behaviour. So what we see is people in organisations who are high in psychological capital doing more decent, good, collegiate, collaborative kinds of things in the way that they execute their work.
And so what are the ingredients of psychological capital? I understand that kind of overarching piece, but I also know that there are some key psychological outcomes or mechanisms that researchers are finding make this possible. Can you walk us through what those might be?
Sure, Michelle. It's another really good question because psychological capital, if you think about it, is like an umbrella term or concept. And sitting underneath that kind of grab bag, if you like, are four very discrete drivers that make up the concept of psychological capital. And they are the four concepts of, firstly, hope, secondly, self-efficacy, thirdly, resilience, and fourthly, optimism, which package really nicely into a HERO acronym. And psychological capital is the dynamic interplay between those four discrete elements. Now, would you like me to explain those a little bit?
That would be fantastic. Take us a bit deeper into each of them, because, again, I think those broader concepts can mean very different things to us depending on the backgrounds we're coming from.
Absolutely. So let's work with that HERO acronym. So the H in that is for hope. And when we talk about hope in terms of psychological capital, we're talking hope theory and we're talking about Rick Schneier's work. And what Rick was talking about was effectively that individuals who are high in hope have three very discrete kinds of behaviours that are evident in the way they work. The first is agency, which is that they see themselves as able to do something to have impact or have influence. So they see themselves as somehow powerful in the situation. The second thing that hopeful individuals have is a sense of pathways, that they see there are multiple ways that they could go about achieving whatever it is they want to achieve. And then the third thing we see is that they have goal-directed behaviour, which means they will set goals and focus on achieving those goals. So that's a very powerful dynamic, because you've got someone who's setting goals, sees themselves as able to achieve them, and having multiple strategies to achieve them. So all good ingredients for goal achievement and goal success. So that's what we're on about when we talk about hope in terms of psychological capital. When it comes to self-efficacy, we're thinking about Albert Bandura's work, and that's about basically the idea of backing yourself in and having confidence and believing in yourself and seeing yourself as capable of achieving outcomes. So an individual that sees themselves as having high levels of self-efficacy will have a go and will see that through their efforts they'll be successful. So they actually end up being more hopeful, being more planful, and seeing that they've got multiple pathways and getting on and doing things. So self-efficacy drives this sort of deep confidence in an individual that whatever I attempt, I'm going to make a decent fist of and hopefully do something really good with. The R in the HERO acronym for resilience is coming from Anne Marston's work, which was based originally in developmental psychology and looking at how children respond to threats to adaptation. So when a child is under threat, what she noticed was that not only will they navigate that, but they'll often bounce back even stronger. And we see that increasing in adults too, the ability to sort of navigate through and bounce back beyond setbacks. So that's what we're talking about when we think about resilience in psychological capital. And the final one, O in the HERO acronym, is for optimism, and it's based on Marty Seligman's work around individuals attributing positive explanations for good things happening. So they're optimistic about the future, they're optimistic about what's likely to happen next, and they can see themselves navigating through that with a can-do kind of attitude. So as you can see, there's kind of an overlap and interplay between those four discrete elements that make up psychological capital. And the real dynamic, the real power of it sits in that interplay, because the concept of psychological capital, it argues that those four elements in combination become incredibly more powerful than each of them individually.
Joy, so what can we do as leaders to fuse these four elements of psychological capital together and show up more authentically at work?
Yeah. Look, I think there's a few things leaders can do to build their own psychological capital. The first step is probably just to understand it. You know, understand the concept, understand what psychological capital is, and think about it in terms of that HERO acronym, and think about how that shows up in their own work. So are they hopeful? Do they see themselves as having agency and pathways in the work that they do? Do they plan? Do they see that sense of self-efficacy and feel confident that they know what they're doing? And if not, are willing to give it a go and see what emerges? So they're optimistic as well. So firstly, it's understanding psychological capital and understanding what it's all about. And I think secondly, becoming a lot more conscious of what we're doing as a leader and how we're showing up. So when we go to perhaps manage performance or provide feedback, thinking about, okay, how do I use psychological capital in this conversation? How do I introduce this idea of hope into this conversation when I'm providing feedback to someone or coaching someone around what they need to do next? So that will show up with things like asking them to think about multiple things that they could do to address the problem rather than just one thing. And that's helping an individual find, you know, very clear, very pragmatic pathways that give them options that allow them to achieve. So it can be things like that, you know, really thinking through what does this mean and how does it show up in my day-to-day work. So a bit of reading and research is probably a really good start for leaders.
And if an organisation wants to help a leader on that journey, how do you suggest organisations introduce the practices of psychological capital into workplaces? I know you've done some great work with organisations exactly tackling that challenge. So what works well on that front?
What I have found works well is, I mean, there's a variety of things you can do, but two areas that we've worked in a little bit and found great success, making the development of the understanding of psychological capital really pragmatic for leaders, and doing that through the lens of managing performance and goal setting and providing feedback, because they're really essential elements of leadership practice. And all of us as leaders are trying to get the best out of our team and say and do the things that unlock performance and unlock possibility and potential in team members. So in delivering training and leadership development around providing feedback and around discussing performance expectations and doing even conversations associated with performance appraisal and coaching, we've looked at the processes for doing that and then infused those processes with the concepts of psychological capital. So, for example, when we're coaching someone and asking them to think about the options available to them, you know, what could you do here? What we've done is linked that back for leaders to say, you know, this is not just a question we ask because it's part of a process. This is a question we ask because it activates the psychological capital of the individual. It makes them realise that they've got some self-efficacy and it helps them identify pathways. So I found really great success at using core leadership practices like coaching and providing feedback and infusing the concept of psychological capital into that to give some of the why and the rationale for the steps that a lot of managers will go through in providing feedback and coaching people without really understanding why they're doing those things, just knowing that, oh, yeah, there's four steps in the process and I follow them. This suddenly brings meaning to those four steps or five steps or however many steps they're working through, and it gives purpose to the questions that they ask. So they're not just running through a process. They actually see there's purpose and intent in what they're doing.
I think they're great practical steps, and I love the way they integrate to things managers are already having to do. So it's not adding another thing on their plate. It's probably making what they do easier, more effective, more joyful, hopefully, as they do it. Have you been in situations at all where you've gone, I don't know that psychological capital would be the right thing to introduce in this organisation or for this leader?
That's a really interesting question. Look, I think there's a couple of things to think about there, Michelle, and for organisations to think about. The first comment I'd make is I think context really matters. And so the question that's always in my mind is why? Why do you want to do this? And we need to be really clear about why we would be introducing something like psychological capital and talking about it with leaders. And there needs to be some sense of the organisation's desire and the leader, the individual's desire to get better at the way that they engage with their people, talk about performance, provide feedback, provide coaching and work in partnership with their people. So I think that the reason why you want to do it has to be clear. And I think it would be a mistake for an organisation to think, oh, this sounds good, this sounds shiny, let's just give it a go, without really connecting it to something that mattered to them, like improving the quality of their leadership conversations. So I think that would be the first thing, is to say, you know, is there a true desire to build quality of conversation as opposed to just thinking, oh, this is a good thing to do. There's another couple of comments I'd make too, Michelle. I was interested and I did a bit of research design around some of the cautions for training development more broadly. And I think there's a couple of things you should also just turn your eye to. One issue is the level of burnout that might be present in the organisation, and that's never a great time to necessarily be introducing some more development. The second thought is around readiness for change, and there are a number of different models you can look at to help uncover how ready for change individuals might be. And if leaders don't think there's anything wrong with the way that they're going through some of those core practices, then psychological capital would be interesting but may not have the relevance of someone who is, again, really motivated and keen to improve the way that they engage with their team. And the final consideration, I think you've got to say sometimes, or maybe not, is if there really isn't a desire to support and scaffold people to take the time to transfer their learning and really develop their skills. Sometimes I've talked with organisations who will say, yeah, we'd like to do it, but I just don't get that sense that there's a true desire to then scaffold and support people to actually bring that change really to life in their leadership practice. And then I think the risk is you talk about something and then you don't give people enough support to actually do it.
I think they're really important considerations. And I also know that you've introduced psychological capital into some unusual environments that we might not necessarily think were very open or welcoming to an idea like psychological capital. Can you tell us what's been your most surprising experience of introducing it into a workplace?
Look, I think, you know, it's interesting. Often you can introduce it into a workplace where the individuals or the nature of the work has you curious about the extent to which people will pick it up and make sense of it. And one of the environments I introduced me to that I'm thinking of in particular was a very strong blue-collar, high-visibility environment, as in everyone wore fluoro clothing because it was transport and logistics, and it was very blokey. And typically the way that leaders interacted with their team was just to say, mate, just get that done. And they were gruff and abrupt. And I thought, oh, is this going to sound very kumbaya? And is this going to sound just, you know, too psychobabble for cut and thrust men who don't like talking about that sort of stuff? And so we were tentative about the way we introduced it. We very much embedded it in cut hard practices like managing performance, and I had a whole lot of blokes that would turn up into a one-day workshop, and they thought the purpose of that workshop was to give them hints and tips on how to get rid of duds and people that they just didn't want in the team. That's what they were keen to do, and we really flipped that and said, no, that happens when everything else you've tried has failed. Probably going to happen 5% of the time. The other 95% of the time, it's going to be about your ability to unlock performance and get someone back on deck and focused and performing again. So coming from that premise, we then talked about how we provide feedback in a meaningful, productive way that actually unlocks performance. And how do you have a conversation that reignites, re-engages someone rather than says to them, I'm watching you and my goal is to get rid of you. And where I thought I would have a whole lot of guys saying, no, I just want to know how to get rid of people, we actually had people saying things like, I wish I'd known this years ago. This is fantastic. I'm going to try this. How long has this stuff been around? I've always gone through these steps, but they've never made any sense to me. And all of a sudden, it just brought to life the practice of managing performance. And it suddenly made sense that as a leader, you can have an incredibly positive impact on the people in your team. And that was really enlightening for these guys, because rather than managing people being a drag, it suddenly became something they were really engaged and wanted to do and wanted to do good by others. It's pretty rewarding, actually, when you have people suddenly turning around wanting to do good rather than just getting rid of dirt. That's a fair bit of movement in a day.
That's a lot of movement in a day, and I love that example. Joe, people are listening to you describe this and going, oh, I want to figure out more about psychological capital and perhaps how I could introduce it into my workplaces or other people I'm working with. Where do they start?
I think the first thing to do is to do a little bit of learning about psychological capital. There is a lot of information just in the public domain on the internet about psychological capital. One of the guys who has been really pivotal in the development of it is a guy called Fred Luthens, and he's quite a prolific writer and has a lot of info just available in the public domain. So it's good, I think, to literally Google it and have a bit of a read and have a think about how this connects with what they might be doing in their organisation. And to really ask those questions of relevance, you know, what would this do for us? How would we use this? Who would we work through with this? And it's probably going to be leaders, you know, which leaders and why? And then to really think about how would we introduce this? And I would say look for existing practices that can be infused with the concept of psychological capital so that it's not another thing that gets introduced or another layer of complexity that leaders have to navigate, but rather it's an enabling tool for the things that they're already responsible for and want to do really well.
Joe, I think that's such a great starting place if people want more. Are you ready for the lightning round?
I am. Let's do it.
So if we take psychological capital as a given, I'm wondering what else might be the most useful positive psychology tool or learning that you've applied in your own life and why?
You know what? I would say I'm a great fan of Brené Brown's work, and I found her work on the gifts of imperfect parenting incredibly liberating. I just went, oh, thank you. So I don't have to be perfect at this. And, you know, when I stuff it up, apparently everyone else is too. So that I found really insightful. And I love Brené's work and around a whole lot of things, but imperfect parenting I really like. But I also love hope theory. And I know it's part of psychological capital, but that was actually what drew me to an interest in psychological capital was I really, really engaged with hope theory.
It's one of my favourite tools to play with as well. What do you think is the must-read book for people wanting to bring out the best in themselves and others in workplaces and why?
I think in terms of bringing out the best in people, I really like Kim Cameron's work on positive leadership. And there's a book in particular he wrote called Practicing Positive Leadership that I really like and I think have got some really very pragmatic and very insightful pieces in there around how leaders can really bring this to life at work and really bring out the best in themselves and the people around them. And I think, you know, if anyone hasn't read Marty Seligman's Flourish, well, they probably should be doing that, shouldn't they, Michelle?
They should absolutely be enjoying that. And I was fortunate enough to interview Kim Cameron earlier in the Making Positive Psychology Work podcast series. So I recommend, in addition to grabbing his book, you might want to listen to that interview, which is on our iTunes page. Jo, what are you reading right now and are you enjoying it?
So right now I'm actually reading Jane Dutton's How to Be a Positive Leader. And I am enjoying it because one of the other things that I like a lot is Jane Dutton's work on high quality connections and how we make those really impactful and meaningful and positive connections with individuals, particularly at work. So I'm enjoying that.
I love Jane's research. And again, we recently interviewed Monica Werlein, who's co-written Jane's new book with her on compassionate work, which is coming out shortly. So highly recommend you add that one onto your reading list. And if you haven't already listened to Monica's podcast a few episodes ago, definitely go and grab that one as well, because they really build beautifully on the ideas of high quality connections through a lens of compassion, but also have some great change levers for how you introduce those kind of practices in organisations that I think you could use for any positive psychology practice you are introducing across a workplace. And lastly, Jo, if there was one thing you wished everybody thought about when it comes to applying positive psychology in workplaces, what would it be?
You know what, Michelle? I would say that I think it's around persisting until the idea that you've got has become a habit. So often we'll have a great idea or concept and we think, oh, yeah, that's good and that was really interesting, but then we don't do the work that's required afterward to really bring that to life in the way that we operate as individuals. And I think that then we miss terrific opportunities. So persisting until that new behaviour is just part of our natural repertoire, I think it's the key to success.
Jo, you know you're speaking the language I love with habits. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Lovely to speak with you.
Likewise. And thank you for listening. You've been listening to Making Positive Psychology Work with Michelle McQuaid. For the notes from today's show and more tested practical ways to help people move from functioning to flourishing at work, be sure to head on over to michellemcquaid.com. And if you'd like to perform a random act of kindness today, then share this podcast with a friend or colleague to help improve our workplaces. After all, as Neil Patrick Harris wisely said, sometimes you can have the smallest role in the smallest production and still have a big impact. Until next time, take care.